This is Richard Grayson speaking, and today is the 14th of November, 2007. I'm introducing something of priceless value. Recently, I came across an interview that I made in 1976 of my late father-in-law, Ted Lin, one of my very favorite people. My father-in-law, Gustav Theodor Lin, Ted Lin, father of my wife. And I had recorded this on tape, and I discovered the tape recently. And so today, with my friend Denny Farrell and his marvelous radio studio here in St. Charles, Illinois, we should make a CD for the benefit of Ted's children and grandchildren and other descendants from now on. Just think of it, 6.5 billion people on the planet, and there's only one cassette like this. And there's only one interview like this. There's only one story like this. Ted Lin was a great raconteur. He told anecdotes that went on forever. He was a shaggy dog teller. And this is one of his shaggy dog stories, but it's really very touching because it's the story of the passing of his father. He predicted his own passing. That's what the unusual part of the story is. Ted Lin was born February 8, 1898. He died Monday, April 6th, 1992. And the recording is about the passing of his father, Klaus Gustav Lind. Klaus was born in 1864, and he died in 1955. I have a letter here. I'd like to read a little bit from it. From the mayor of Vetlanda, Sweden. Klaus Gustav Lind came over here from Sweden in 1883, and he was born June 11, 1864, in Vetlanda Parish. He was the son of the worker Carl August Lind, so you see that he was around for a long time. Although we modern people have touched, therefore, the people from way back in the middle of the last century. So here goes the tape recording, then, of the interview with my late father-in-law, Ted Lin, one of my very favorite people.
Well, Dick, I've told you several times before about the beautiful scene of when my father passed away. My dad had really started to fail about a year before his passing. The date of passing was April 11th, 1955. But for several years before that, my wife and I had lived about 2 miles away from him, and we saw he and my stepmother very, very often. But the last year, I visited him every day without fail. On Thursday, every Thursday, I had taken him uptown to do what business he had and to do his purchasing, which he did carefully. After all of his experience of buying the material for two different orphans' homes, one in Stanton, Iowa for 16 years and one at Besa, Minnesota for 2 years. But eventually, he just got too weak to go uptown and stand the rigors of walking and
shopping.
And that
was in 1955 we're talking about?
Yes. So, well, it was really, in 54. Then I said, from now on, Dad, I said, I'll do all your shopping and all your business for you. And I can see the look of resignation on his face now when he said, "Oh, Theodore, you can't do my work." But after that, he stayed home, and I was up every day. But on Thursdays, of course, I went up and got his list and did his business and carried home his groceries or whatever he had to do. And everything was happy and cheerful. He got up every day and ate his 3 meals a day, and he always wanted to go over and help his wife to do the dishes or something like that, because he had been active the years before.
When did he marry his second wife?
Oh, I think it was about 1935.
Oh, and when did your mother die?
1932.
Oh.
So, I went up there on Monday morning as usual, and everything was okay. I just went in, and after breakfast, his wife never wanted him to bother with, it wasn't the place of a man to help her with the dishes, she could do that. So he'd go down and lie on the bed. She made the bed and always covered it with an Indian blanket. And I kept him supplied with plenty of magazines to read, religious magazines and other Saturday evening posts or such good magazines like that. And he was lying on his bed, and I told him where I was going. And then when I came home at night, every evening I went to see him. He would ask me about what I had done and how the hogs were getting along. And I said I was a feed expert and a nutritionist. So he'd ask me what farmers, what their names were, and I'd say, "Oh, Dad," earlier in the program, I'd say, "Oh, Dad, I can't tell you everything." And he said, "Tid, or don't you know that you are my eyes and ears? I'm interested in what goes on in the country, and I'm interested in your work, and can't you take time to tell me?" And from that time on, I told him as much as I could. Monday morning was fine, Monday evening was fine, and Tuesday before Easter Sunday, which came on April the 10th that year.
That's 55.
Yeah. He said, "Theodore, do you remember that little tombstone that I put up on your mother's grave?" And I said, "Yes." Well, he said, "That was a little cheap one. I didn't take in consideration about my going." He said, "I want that one taken away." And he said, "Do you know the tombstone man here in town?" And I said, "Yes." "Would you go and get him? I want to buy my double marker today." I said, "Dad, I can't do it today. I've got an important appointment down at Perry, and I must go." He said, "There isn't time. This is very important because I won't be here after Sunday." He said, "I'm leaving Easter Sunday." And I kidded him, and we laughed together. No, he said, "I'm serious." So I said, "Okay." So I called up and made other arrangements, and I went down and got Marsolek, and I said, "Take several samples of your rock." And I said, "If you have a design with the wife on the left-hand side or on the north side facing the east," and I said, "My mother is buried there and Dad will be on south of her, and take that along." I said, "Dad will look him over carefully." I said, "I don't know how much money he has, but you make out the contract and let him pay you all he has, and if there's anything left that isn't paid, my sister and I will pay that." He said, "Okay." So we went up, and I introduced him to Mr. Marsolek, and he picked out the rock he wanted, a kind of a brownish one. And he said, "Now, Mr. Marsolek, how much is that going to cost?" So Mr. Marsolek said, "I'll figure it out." So he mentioned an amount, which I don't remember now. And he said, "Taylor, get my billfold out of the magazine rack," which I did. He took out the roll of bills, or the wad of bills, and he handed them to Mr. Marsolek. And he said, "That's every cent I have in the world." And he said, "That should pay for it." And so Mr. Marsolek counted it out, and he said, "You got $10 too much," which he handed back. Dad was glad to get some back. And after, he said, "Now get that all on there. And I see Carlson on the north and C.G. Lind on the south. Born June the 11th, 1864. Died April the 10th, 1955. Put it down." He said, "Okay, okay." So he signed the contract. Everything was done. And he thanked Mr. Marsolek. When I took Mr. Mosolik down to his office, he said, "Do you think I ought to engrave that now?" He said, "That's costly to cut that stuff into stone and then have to throw it away." I said, "No, don't do it yet." I said, "It's nice that you promised him, though." Well, he said, "That was kind of eerie." He said, "Does your father believe that he's going?" I said, "He knows he's going. He absolutely knows. Now, don't kid about that. But just leave that till afterwards." So I said, "Well, how much do we owe you now?" He said, "You owe me $30. He said, "I just did that to make your dad feel happy." And I thought that was a nice gesture, not to take every cent he had, see. So, he said, "We got that done." And Paul said, "Well, now I'm really relieved." He said, "Now you can go about your business." Well, by that time it was too late for me to go any distance, so I monkeyed around home. And Monday evening I went up to see him. And my wife was down at Des Moines helping her sister in a little restaurant, and she needed help so badly. And I was batching at the time. So Tuesday morning I went up there, and the first thing I don't know, Dad was hard of hearing. I said his wife would just yell at him. And he'd say, "Don't holler so loud, you hurt my ears. Tell it to Theodore, and he can tell it to me." And I don't know, Dick, but he could hear my voice. Mm-hmm. And I've tried to understand why, but I found out from a ear doctor in Ames that there's different wavelengths. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Yours carried just a little bit better than anybody else's." But as soon as I would step on the kitchen door in another room when I came, he said, "Here comes Theodore." Mm-hmm. He would hear my limpy step. And he said, "Theodore, who are the pallbearers? Do you remember?" And I said, "Yes." "Name them." So I named them off. And he said, "Well," he said, "I want you to go home and call them." The telephone at their place was in his stepson's name because he was in business uptown. And they would take the orders there for him. And he paid the telephone. So I couldn't call long distance. So I went home and called up Frank Peterson.
Keep talking.
A good friend of ours up at Dayton. And Frank said, "Ted, when did your dad die?" I said, "Dad isn't dead." But I said, "He's going Sunday for sure." He said, "You know, if it wasn't such a serious problem," he said, "I'd laugh." He said, "You know, your dad was always just a little bit different." I said, "No, it's true." So I said, "You get a hold of Art Youngdale and tell him." He said, "Your dad, that any time that we should be down there, we'll be there." So I had to go and get the other four down in Boone. Then I went right up after I had got them, and I said, "Well, I've called all the pallbearers," and I said, "They'll officiate." He said, "You know, I forgot to tell you to call Pastor and Mrs. Carlson. I want them to sing two Swedish songs." And he said, "I hate to have you make a long distance," and I said, "That's all right." So I called Dayton again. Mrs. Carlson answered, and the pastor had gone uptown, walked uptown to get the mail. And she said, "When did your father pass away, Mr. Linden?" I said, "Dad hasn't passed away." And I said, "The doctor said he's strong enough and healthy enough to live another 10 years. But he's insisted that he's going to die on Easter Sunday." She said, "You tell your father that if we are anywhere close around Dayton at the time he passes away, we'll be glad to be down there." So I went up and told Dad again. That took care of Tuesday. Then Wednesday and Thursday were just, everything was settled. But Thursday he wanted me to get one of the ushers at the church and give him the $10 bill to put in the collection. He said, "I don't need it. I have nothing to give you. Everything that I've given you is you've gotten before, and it's just you and Esther. So I have nothing to give anybody, and I'm going to give it to the church." Well, I said, I have a better idea. I said, why don't you wait till Pastor Nelson comes up Good Friday to give you the communion? And I said, then you give it to him. Well, that's a good idea. So Friday morning, I went up to see Dad. And Pastor Nelson came shortly, and he called my stepmother in, and he sat up in bed, fully dressed, intelligent. He told Pastor that he was going Easter Sunday. He said, I want you to take this $10 bill and give it where it was needed the most. He said, Tidder's mother and I spent 18 years taking care of other people's orphan children, and now I want this to go where it'll do the most good. Pastor Nelson said, I will not take it. The Lord doesn't require every cent. If you want to, I'll take a dollar. That's a tenth. But I will not take the tenth. Paul said, yes, you're going to take it. I don't want it. I'm done because I'm leaving and I don't need any money. So Pastor Nelson did and left. Well, Saturday, I could see that Dad was getting ready. And I called my sister up at Fort Dodge, and she came down on the interurban. And Saturday, she was with Pa and my stepmother. And I told Esther, my sister, that I was going down to Des Moines to get my wife. So I went down to Des Moines, and I said, honey, if you want to see Dad alive, you come home. Because I said, he's sinking so fast. He's got everything done. He has nothing more to live for. And I said, Grace's sister said, hurry, Grace, don't you just get in the car and go. Don't even change your uniform. So we went right up and to the home. And I said, Dad was so glad to see Grace. He said, Grace, would you do one last favor for me? And she said, I'll do anything you ask. He said, I want you to make a little meatloaf, like Mama used to make it, Tidder's Mama. Half and half, half sausage and half ground beef. And don't put too much seasoning in it. Just make it just right. Well, Grace had never tasted any of my mother's meatloaf, so she didn't know what was right, but she did the best she could. So we went right home and went downtown and got the ingredients, and we went home, and Grace baked a little meatloaf, and she took some in to him, and he said, I want you to give it to me. So she took a spoonful, and he sat up and he smacked his lips, and he said, just like Mama used to make it. And he said, now that's the last food I'll take while I'm here. And I said, that was a kind of a touching time, just for a short time. Grace felt really sorry. But Saturday night, my sister and wife went to our home to go to bed. And I sat in the little hallway from the kitchen to the bedroom all night long. Never slept a wink. I just sat there and watched Dad. And sometimes he slept very peaceably. But other times that he was holding, he'd always had his arms up toward heaven, up toward the sky. I didn't understand a word he said, but he was mumbling something. Then he'd go to sleep again, and then he'd wake up and go through the same things. Not violently, but just peaceably.
What would he do?
Just hold his hands up, and he'd smile, and he seemed to be conversing.
With somebody?
Yeah. This is absolutely true. This is just what went on. Well, then...
But you couldn't understand it?
No. No, he didn't talk loud enough. Kind of a whisper. But 6:30 was his time to get up. Every morning. He never missed it. And at 6:30, I was sitting right there, and I saw him stir, and I went in, and his wife was still in bed, and I said, you didn't make it, did you, Dad? This is Easter Sunday. No, that's what I was talking about last night. It won't be today. It'll be tomorrow. But I've got something to do today. And so many things that had happened, I'd smile inside of myself and without laughing out loud, but I thought a lot of it was just kind of not eerie or spooky. It was just hard to believe that he believed us so strongly. Well, Sunday there, a lot of people came, and he talked, not fluently, but he talked and he greeted everybody and thanked them for coming. One fellow especially that he used to go fishing with. And when he went in there, he was walked with a cane, big, heavy-set man. He said, "Jim, we've had a lot of good times together. Now after today, you'll never see me anymore. And if you don't change, we'll never see each other. I'm going home, and you go to the other place." And he said, I saw the tears just streaming out of Jim's eyes, and he had to hurry out of there. And he and his wife drove him home to Gilbert after a while. And then his stepson, Bert, who lived just nearby, came over before he went down to work. He told his stepson, he couldn't talk, but he asked him to get the alarm clock. So when Bert got the alarm clock, he pointed to 10 o'clock, and Bert shook his head. "Well, he tried to talk things to me, but I gave him a little notebook that I carried that was a property or a gift of the Lutheran Brotherhood. And I have it written down in his own handwriting how he wrote in there, 'I am going tonight at 10 o'clock. Well, Bert came home at 10 o'clock, just a few minutes before 10. And he
Whose said, handwriting?
His. He wrote it.
Oh, he couldn't speak, but he
no,
could write?
No, he wrote. I have the book. I wouldn't part with that book for $10,000.
And that was Sunday, Easter Sunday, he wrote that?
No, that was Monday morning.
Oh, Monday morning he wrote that.
Sunday, he said, "Don't worry about me today. It won't happen today. It'll be tomorrow." So he had a work to do Sunday. Now, this is Monday.
What was the work that he had to do Sunday?
Convert that guy that he'd been fishing with all these years.
Oh, Jim.
Jim. So Bert came home a few minutes before 10, and the first thing he said, "How's Johnny?" Well, I said, "Paul's weakening, but," I said, "he's still here, and he writes in the book." Well, the last couple of days I had made him a chair. I'd taken the cane out of the bottom of the chair and padded it so he wouldn't have to walk 20 feet into the bathroom, so they could just get up and sit on the toilet. But anyway, on Sunday, Grandma moved the chair into the toilet and hid it behind the door. Now, it's written just as plain as day, "Make her bring back the stool." I said, "No, Dad." I said, "I won't do it." I said, "I'll tell you what I'll do. I had heard that just before they pass away, they have a terrific bowel movement. I'd never seen it, but I'd heard that. So I said, I'll make you a diaper so that you can be safe." And he smiled, and he was so happy. So I took his pajamas down, and I fixed him up a nice diaper and cleaned him up nice and put the diaper on. Then he seemed content. And several times during the day, Grace would come up. Grace and Esther were up there most of the day. I never left. Several times he'd write in the book. There's one sentence in there that I would just give anything that I own if I could read it. And I said, "Pa, what does it mean? What is it?" And he tried to mumble it out, but he just couldn't form the words. And he'd point to the words like I should be able to decipher it, but I can't. Nobody else can. So I don't know what he said. But the afternoon went pretty quietly. He slept between times. And I had asked the doctor before, I told my son-in-law, Dick here, that I asked the doctor before if there was anything we could do to prolong Dad's life. And he said, your father don't want to live. Just don't care to live anymore. He's spent his time. And he said, as far as his body is concerned, he could live to 110. He's as strong as an ox.
And he was how old?
91. Or lacking 2 months to the day. So he said, yes, I can, we can fix him up. I said, how long, what good it would do? He said, nothing. Just keep him living. Well, I said, Dad wants to go. He's told me the day he's going to go. He's got everything done. He's got the preacher and the pallbearers and everything. And I said, I'll talk to my sister and my wife. They both agreed that Paul should be allowed to go when he wanted to. So I said, I had such a terrific headache, and I said, Esther, I want you to stay by Dad's bedside. Ma sat in her favorite chair in the dining room. And I said, I've got to lay down. We didn't know of any kind of pain pills in those days but aspirin. And I said, I took aspirin by the spoonful. And I laid on the Davenport, and Grace sat by me and put cold packs on my head. And I was just terrifically sick. And at 8 o'clock, my sister said that I should go in to see my dad because he'd had a... So I went in and I said, you have an accident, Dad? And he shook his head. So I said, okay. I said, I'll open the window and put the ventilator in it so you won't get a draft right from the window. And I said, he smiled and patted me. And in his way, he thanked me. And I went in and laid on the Davenport again. And I still told Esther, I said, you stay right there. Because I said, Dad said 10 o'clock, and he meant 10 o'clock. Well, 20 minutes of 10, by my wristwatch, my sister came in again and told me. And I said, boy, I said, he had a real accident. I said, Esther, get some water warm. They didn't have a hot water, running hot water, so she had to heat it on the stove. And I took this prepared diaper off, and Grace had just had fresh laundered pajamas. And I said, they smell so sweet and clean. And I said, Dad, I'm going to put you on a pair of clean pajamas. And he said, okay. So when I took the old ones off, I said, now, Dad always did everything just opposite for me. I always used my, raised my left leg first. He always put his right stock on first, his right shoe on first. So he put his right foot up, and I took his pants leg off and on the left one. And then when I got that folded up, I said it wasn't soiled or anything, but I got the fresh one there, and I said, Dad, lift up your foot. I thought he was going to lift up the left one like I do, but here he lifted up his right one all by himself. I put that pants leg on, then his left one, and I said, now raise up. He raised up his hips. I pulled up his pants, his pajama bottoms, and I said, I'll straighten out your shirt a little bit. So I straightened out his jacket. As I was laying him down, I said, my sister was there, but my wife was in the other room. And I was laying him down, I noticed something out of the ordinary, and I said, Esther, get Grace. I said, Dad's going. So Grace came running in and got on the south side of the bed, and Esther and I were on the wrong side of the bed, and Grandma couldn't get there in time. I still had my arm under his head, and when I just laid him down, he patted my right arm. Then he reached over and he patted Grace and shook her hand. Then he took Esther's hand with his right hand. Then he took both of them and folded over his breast. He took one little breath, just a little sharper than the other. And he shut his eyes. I still had my arm under his head. And I took my arm away, and he shut his eyes. And I said, well, Dad's gone. So I felt of his pulse. I couldn't feel anything. Grace couldn't feel anything. I put my head down to his breast, and I said, well, no sign of life. So I caught Grandma. That was exactly 8 minutes of 10. 8 minutes before he said he was going. So I told Grandma, I said, well, Dad is gone. And she was just 2 months younger to the day that Dad was. But I called the undertakers right away, and one of the undertakers and his helper came up, and he said, Ted, who closed your dad's eyes? And I said, he did. No, he said, they don't do that when they die. I said, Dad did. Dad shut his eyes first, and then he died. He said, that's the most unusual thing I've heard. Well, of course, they took Dad out of the home. He never in 91 years, lacking 2 months, had ever had to take a laxative. And he had a lot of aches, but otherwise, and his heart was slow, but his body was strong.
How long prior to his death did he predict his death?
Well, on Tuesday morning when I came up.
Oh, not before that?
No. But
so that was 5 days.
I said, Dad, I said, what in the world caused you to make these predictions on Tuesday, I said.
But he wasn't worse on Tuesday than he had been for a year, I suppose.
No, we talked.
He was perfectly well.
I'd sit by his bedside and talk to him. We'd talk about hogs and cattle and everything else.
And he wasn't
else.
Sick?
No. I wasn't sick a bit.
Why couldn't he get out of bed, though?
He could.
Oh.
He got out of bed every day alone, but I just didn't want him to walk into the 20 feet into the toilet when he had to go to the toilet, so I just had that stool made for him. So he just, about 4 feet from shore. I guess he was out of bed every day except Sunday.
The only reason he was lying around all the time was because he was old and
old
tired.
And weak.
And weak.
Yeah. And so on Monday, of course, I went to the pastor's home and I told him. Pastor Nelson was a good friend of ours. And I told him what had happened. He said, I've only heard of it once in my life that I really knew of. I've heard stories of something like that. But he said, Ted, I want you to understand that the last few months your father has lived in the spirit world more than he has lived in the material world. That's the word I wanted to use a little while ago, material. And he said, what goes on there, we don't know. But he was communicating with good spirits. And what he couldn't hear here, and what he couldn't see here, he heard and saw spiritually. Well, that's the end of that episode.
Did he explain that any further,
no,
the pastor?
No. He didn't know any more about it than I did.
Then why did he say that?
Well, because the dad was, I suppose, Dad was laying there thinking of all of these things. Dad's eyesight was getting awful poor. I wanted to get him a hearing aid months before, but he wouldn't do it. He said, I don't need it. I can hear plenty. Anything I need to know, you can tell me. And he'd hear every word that I would tell him in a conversational voice. And so he said, I don't need to hear anymore. So I don't want anybody to spend any money on that. But anyway, the closer the time came, I don't know how it works. I don't believe in spiritism. But I know there are good and bad spirits. I know that. And that's why I'm interested in this book about demons. I know there are bad demons, and I know what demons can do. Also, if you tell the devil and his dirty old rotten demons, like the Bible says, resist the devil and he will flee from you. If you tell him to get going, he'll go. And if you want God's angels around you, God's angels will be there. And we don't have to have demon devotion or demon strength or demon control. We let ourselves go. Well, Dick, That should be the end of that interview.
Good interview. I'm going to send Danny a copy of that.